This episode is brought to you by Podomatic, the easiest way for podcast fans to become podcasters. Go to podomatic.com or search Podomatic in your app store to start your own podcast for free and find your audience. Hello and welcome to episode number 360 of the Super Horror Bros podcast. I am your host Matt, and joining me as always is my brother Mike.
Hello.
How's it going?
Pretty good.
We are back to discuss a movie that has been dodging us for a very long time, or maybe we were dodging it.
I was going to say, who was dodging who? I mean, no one can be sure.
Exactly. Let's just call it even. But yeah, we have finally now seen Ari Aster's new film, which is always very exciting. Long time in the making. What, 4 years since the amazing Midsommar?
4 years. Is that real?
Yeah, which is obviously still one of our favorite movies that we've covered. I think it would certainly be in a top five for sure. Mm. After these, you know, what, over 360 episodes. So very exciting. No, exactly. So yeah, I'm excited to finally talk about this mammoth of a movie. But there's a couple of little news stories. This first one's interesting because I was trying to find out about this almost forgotten movie. This is almost like a throwback of the UK getting shafted. And we haven't had one of these in a while, where I feel like we've basically got most films straight away. Or they've been, you know, the classic, you get it 3 weeks later because lols. Whereas with this one, it's like, oh no, this movie's just disappeared off the slate after just coming out in the States over the weekend. And there is actually a reason for it that I was able to find. So the movie is The Last Voyage of the Demeter.
I remember that.
Yeah, like we saw the trailer and both quite liked it. The kind of Dracula on a ship movie looked pretty cool.
Upcoming horror movie list movie as well. I think it was first mentioned on the first show of the year.
It was indeed. And yeah, it was one that we both wanted to see. But I'd kind of forgotten about it and thinking, you know, we're talking about a lot of these possession movies that have kind of dominated the trailer scene at the cinema recently. Because I think we did see trailers for this at the cinema, you know, at the start of the year. And it just completely disappeared. And yeah, it came out in the States. It's not done well at all, where I think it's just come out. And I mean, there is no hype. There's no advertising or anything. Like, this thing has just been shut out to die, which is a shame. But as far as the UK goes, yeah, it just got pulled completely. And supposedly, it's because the distribution is different. So it's Universal in the States, but it's a company called E1 in the UK, which I am sort of vaguely familiar with. It's a logo that you've probably seen before films, like a lowercase e and then one. But they have been recently acquired by Lionsgate. And so that seems to be what happened, is that they've acquired it, and so now they're figuring out what to do with all these assets that they've acquired. And this was one that clearly needed to be distributed. Obviously, there's a cost with that, let alone the marketing, but actually just getting the film to the cinema is a cost. And so Lionsgate, you know, maybe they have other plans with this, who knows? Like, they have been so weird in recent years. Like, I've talked about it a lot in the news that I really struggle with Lionsgate, especially their UK arm. Like, I just haven't been a fan of them for a long time and the way they do business. You know, there was that, what was that movie with like the slaves and it had a twist? I can't remember what it was now, but that was one that just got delayed for like a year. Do you remember the movie I'm talking about where it was like, it looked like it was old time America about slaves, but it wasn't. It was like modern day. That was the twist. Do you remember that one?
Oh, it vaguely rings a bell.
It was like, well, one word title that began with M. I'll look it up in a sec once I can look up like Lionsgate's films, but something like Malevolent. I just can't remember what it's called now, but we did not like it. We just watched that digitally because it came out like the following year, like a whole year later, and they just put it in cinemas for a week. And I feel like that's going to be the case with this one, where I'm sure this will come out digitally probably soon in the next month, and that's probably how we're going to watch it now, because I'm certainly not waiting for Lionsgate to figure things out.
It's so frustrating.
And yeah, it's a shame because, yeah, this was one that we were actually looking forward to and would have seemingly, I think, been a nice cinema watch. But yeah, in case you're wondering, that is the update, is that it's just disappeared because of this new, obviously, the distributor being acquired. And yeah, obviously, it is out in the States, but apparently no one is going to see it anyway, which is a shame because it's been a pretty successful year for horror. Obviously, we've talked a lot about recently. Stuff like Talk to Me is still doing super well. Like I think the word of mouth, like going into week two and week three, that movie has just kept doing super, super well, which is nice to see because obviously people are being incredibly positive about it, including ourselves on last week's show. But yeah, and in this next news item, just a small one again, this is again, easy to forget that we're getting a new Mike Flanagan show this year.
Crazy.
Because there's been, we've talked about obviously his Amazon deal, him leaving Netflix and moving to Amazon for the future of his kind of Intrepid Pictures company, which is how he produces his TV shows. We also talked about his next movie project, which is the most exciting thing for sure. Based upon one of those Stephen King short stories. But yeah, he does have the final show for Netflix, which has already been done and ready to go. And we now know when we will get to see this. So this is, of course, The Fall of the House of Usher. And no surprise that this will launch on Netflix on the 12th of October. So very much keeping in line with all of the Flanagan stuff on Netflix. This is a different one to the rest, where you obviously have Midnight Mass and Haunting of Hill House, where he directed every episode. You then had Bly Manor, which he did two episodes, and Midnight Club, which he did one episode. This one is split 50-50, so he's done half and another guy has done half, so it's hard to compare that because he's not done this strategy before. We're getting half, like, because I always think it's like, how do we judge this? You know, like, is it a full Flanagan thing? Because what he's delivered when he's, directed every episode is unbelievable. And it's so different. I liked Bly Manor. I didn't watch Midnight Club. But it's just not even in the same conversation as those other two shows.
Well, it just shows, like, someone you're such a fan of and you've not seen one of his shows because he isn't, it's the one he directed the least.
Yeah, he directed the least. I didn't like the trailers. Everyone who watched it, including yourself, didn't really like it. So it that did nothing for me. But I am excited for this because what they were talking about with this being this kind of hyper-violent show, him kind of being less restrained. And we said at the time, it's exciting, but it's also not what we want from Flanagan. Like, we love the long, drawn-out emotional stuff. I think that's why I sign up for anything with his name on it. But I do think the peak of that was Midnight Mass, in terms of these just long, drawn-out, one-take emotional sequences. I feel like he's delivered the best version of that he's ever going to get in TV form. And it's why I said at the time, I want him, because I don't think we've seen the best Flanagan movie yet. But I just can't think of a world where he could top Midnight Mass. So I'm excited that, yes, he's doing TV, but it's supposedly something very different. It's very just delivering on gore, delivering on violence and action, and I think that's going to be very cool.
I don't believe for this.
Do you not? Do you think that's all just like service?
No, I think it will be violent and gory, but I still think we're going to get what you're talking about. I don't think he will just change his spots to make something that's just that. I think it will just be more of that, but I still feel like there'll be, a 45-minute scene where they just chat. Mark Hamill and Rahul just have a little heart-to-heart, or at least that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see if it isn't that, because, yeah, this has the entire, all the returning cast members of all of those TV shows. Yeah, like, it's really the who's who. Like, it's everyone for this one, which I think proves that this is kind of the next almost proper Flanagan show, because I know Midnight Club had, a couple of returning faces? Yeah. But this one has everyone. So, from Midnight Mass and obviously Hill House. So, I'm really excited for this. This is going to be a great watch, and, I'm sure we'll be doing an entire episode on this because it's it's Flanagan's farewell on Netflix, and I think at that point it'll be great to look back and be like, look at these films and TV shows that he contributed as part of this partnership, and it's really astonishing what they were able to achieve. And I think that there's going to be a lot of pressure on this Amazon collab, because he's delivered more often than he hasn't for Netflix. It was such a perfect match, I think. Like, even with this release date, they always put it around Halloween as well. Like, they never fucked him around and just shut it out in April and didn't talk about it. I think Netflix always put the Netflix marketing powerhouse behind Flanagan and made him their go-to thing at Halloween, which I always thought was a massive, you know, credit to them for that. But yeah, we shall see. I'm very, very looking forward to that one. Shall we talk about this week's film?
Let's do it.
Let's finally talk about Bo is Afraid. So yeah, I feel like this one really doesn't need too much of an introduction. It's certainly not like some of these movies we cover where we're like, have we talked about this? Haven't we? We've covered every single thing about this movie. From
the movie itself.
Yeah, exactly. But like from the second this was just a genesis of an idea in the brain of an absolute madman, and it just had a title called Bo is Afraid, and it was like, okay, we're not sure if he's doing a horror. Very early on, it was talks about him not doing a horror, but it was described as a sort of nightmare comedy, which that has stuck to me. Like them calling it that probably 4 years ago was still in my brain when I watched this, and I still think it's probably the perfect way to describe what this film is.
It definitely is, yeah.
But then, yeah, Joaquin Phoenix obviously getting attached to this being like his next big movie after winning the Oscar for Best Actor for Joker. Like, it felt like a perfect storm, and it felt like he was just making something that he wanted to make. Like, he really was one of these directors that had the world at his feet after these two huge, indie successes. 4A24 again, we've been talking a lot about them recently, but this is another movie by them, of course, and I'm glad that he stuck by them, because you know he could have got big offers from big production companies, and I think they've kind of went against what they would typically do as a production company, to kind of deliver for Ari and be like, yeah, we want to still be part of this, but they're not going to make a $5 million movie. You know, this is a big budget, $35 million. Joaquin Phoenix is the lead role in a 3-hour film. Like, this is very un A24, where I think they went big and they bet on Ari for this one. Obviously, we can get into our thoughts, but in terms of the box office, because this obviously came out in April, it wasn't a success. You know, that banking on all of those things that we just discussed didn't pay out, and this was unfortunately definitely a box office bomb, because it only made $11 million. And I think even when you contribute, like, this had a fairly sizable marketing arm, I think they did it right. Like, people knew this was coming out, and they put it in front of people. I think just a lot of people's reactions was like, what? and I don't blame people either. Like, we saw the trailer and we were about as well prepared as you could be. You know, we'd heard that it being this nightmare comedy, this weird 3-hour epic with Joaquin Phoenix telling different, you know, times in his life and all that. And we still watched a trailer and was like, what the hell is this?
Yeah.
You know, and I don't think any trailer could even possibly capture the energy of this film. Like, I still felt unprepared.
I don't think watching it for 3 hours does. No. Do you know what I mean? if the trailer was 3 hours long and was the movie, I still would go, don't know if I want to see that or not. I don't know what that is. Yeah. You know,
I think
that's the hardest thing. Like, this feels counterproductive to everything that Hollywood and people that want to make movies to make money does.
Yeah.
Where you get the opportunity to get the big budget and a huge actor, and you just do the most batshit crazy thing ever.
Yeah.
I love and respect it so much that you kind of, it's almost like he knew he wouldn't get this opportunity again. So he's like, do I try to go huge, you know, or do I just fucking seize the day? Mm. And like, you know, I don't feel like it's, you know, when we saw like Last Night in Soho and we were like, how are people not seeing this and talking about this movie, and how is this not doing bigger? Like, I'm not saying like this movie shouldn't be seen, but it doesn't surprise me that it's not like this hugely box office successful thing, because I genuinely don't think that's what it's designed for. It's a huge budget movie that was designed for this very crazy indie idea, which almost should never be made today, but you know, he took the opportunity, and that's what I love.
Yeah, like everything about this is not trying to make money and not trying to be successful. Like you say, it is about making as many left field choices as possible, and not thinking about any of that stuff. Really just thinking about, what do I want to do? And we can kind of get into that, you know, what does that mean? When you're making your third movie, you've made two incredibly successful horror films that are, you know, almost genre defined. And like, I think when people look back on this incredible era of horror, like, it's going to be impossible to have that conversation without talking about both Hereditary and Midsommar, the impact they've had, and especially in such a golden era for horror, and especially horror doing absolute madness at the box office, means that it's almost like I think right now, being a filmmaker who's making horror, is like the best time, because before you would be the kind of the skid mark of Hollywood, and you'd be like, even if you wanted to make a horror film, if you were talented, everyone in a suit with money would be telling you to not make a horror film. Whereas I think, like what we're doing to discuss, in companies like A24, they would be more than happy for Ari Aster to continue to make a, you know, in the region of $5 to $10 million horror film every 2 to 3 years. And I'm sure that would have been the dream for them. But instead, he, you know, and those were back-to-back years as well. That's like another thing, is that Hereditary came out, and within a year he'd made Midsommar. I remember he talked about Hereditary. Like, they basically had the world premiere for Hereditary, and then that weekend he was off shooting Midsommar. So he didn't even really get to enjoy the success of his, like, breakout film, because he was just already off grinding the next one. And so for this to be like a four-year gap, and obviously not being a straight horror film either, like, he's just made so many choices that seem like not bad ones, but they're clearly, he's just doing whatever the hell he wants. And I think we can both agree that we massively respect that, and it's something that I wish all creators could do, is not think about the realities of their decision making. But like, ultimately every filmmaker can't do this, because we're talking about it now almost somewhat in hindsight, and the movie hasn't done well. And who knows, maybe this, obviously, I'm sure that, I mean, the conversation would be different if this would have made $100 million. But the fact is, the chances of this making $100 million was so unbelievably low. And I feel like it probably did about as good as it was ever going to do. And everyone involved probably knew that. So from their perspective, I don't think this is like a miss. It's just like, this piece of art exists now for people to consume it, and we'll just have to wait and see. I think the big question is now, like, what does Ari do next? Does he wait another 4 years to do something this radical, or does he do something perhaps that you'd expect? But maybe that's, you know, a conversation that we have at the end. But I do think that's just, I'm so fascinated, not necessarily by this movie, but by everything of surrounding this movie. Like, just the idea of this existing, and obviously having now seen it now, I think it is so unbelievably insane that this movie exists on every single level. Like, I still can't believe what this film actually is. Where I'm like, you know, I was watching this at home, and I just can't even fathom watching this in the cinema.
No, I truly can't.
Like, it's just so crazy, and there's so many unbelievable scenes where I'm like, God, people actually went with their popcorn and their drinks, potentially on a Saturday night, potentially with their other half, you know, just wanting a bit of light, frothy entertainment, and this is the film that they got. Like, that's just crazy to me.
The thing that I love as well is, you know, most of the time when we go into the cinema, we know the runtime of the movie we're going to watch, but that's not the normal person.
Yeah, that's funny, isn't it? That's the last thing we always say, isn't it, in the cinema? Yeah. We always check the runtime. Yeah, you're like, right. That's not the norm.
No, so you think, like, people have gone to this movie, they've gone to like an 8-9 o'clock screening.
Half 12.
You know, and then cut to them like 2 hours and 45 minutes, and they get to the attic, and they're like, what is going on? Like, this is my first date. Like, you know, and I think, you know, it is funny, because I think Hereditary never like it did what it said on the can. It said what it, you know, it didn't ever lie about what it was, and it delivered on that. I think Midsommar, we spoke about how that had a very strange marketing where it was like Florence all looking like the summer princess, and it looked like this could be like not a horror movie. You know, all of the advertising to me, the promotional images didn't look like a horror movie. And I think that tricked people in. And this one is just like, well, there is no way to categorically tell you what this is. Yeah. So like, just good luck.
From the title to the posters to even if you went, oh, I'll watch the trailer, I feel like you can't gauge what this film is in the slightest from anything.
I'm honestly just delaying trying to synopsize it. That's all I'm trying to do right now, because I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, how long you got?
Apparently 3 hours.
Yeah, but I don't think that's enough time. If you gave me 3 hours to synopsize it, I don't think I could. I still don't know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I guess to try to talk about what this movie is about, obviously, you know, it centers around Bo, played by Joaquin Phoenix, kind of him. We see him throughout his, you know, whole life in a series of kind of flashbacks and possibly flash forwards, who the hell knows. But effectively, we join him flash sideways, yeah, as a kind of really anxiety ridden kind of middle-aged man who is in therapy trying to deal with, you know, we find out throughout the movie really kind of this overbearing mother and what this impact that she's had on him. But shortly after we're introduced to him via this kind of therapy scene, this whole movie is through Bo's eyes. So, you know, I would say from the very beginning of the movie, we effectively get Bo being born into this world. Mm. And I think as soon as we get beyond that scene, you could almost argue that nothing in this movie then you could take for real. Every single minute of this movie could be Bo's entire imagination. None of it could, which I think is incredibly unlikely, or anywhere in between.
Yeah.
And I think that is the entire point of this movie, is we are seeing it through a troubled man's eyes and what the world is and how he is interpreting the scenarios that put in front of him. And we have to decide how much of this we believe or not. And you know, it's a, you know, once we actually strip this back and actually talk about what this movie's about, you know, it really does talk a lot about kind of mental health and what it can actually do to an individual and how it can warp reality. You know, this isn't a man that's on, you know, drugs, on a trip or anything like that. This is just, you know, his upbringing and his mental health kind of come into this crisis, really. Where he sees the world in this kind of, you know, we see him coming back to his apartment, and it was when it first threw me, because I think the whole therapy scene at the start of the movie is, you know, played reasonably normal. And then he's just like walking home and there's just like a dead body in the street.
Yeah.
And then he like locks eyes with this homeless person, and they end up having this mad race where the homeless person is chasing after him, and Bo just makes it into his apartment building and slams the door shut. And then he carries on walking like that's just every day. Like every day I have this race, and this bloke is just trying to kill me every day. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And it took me a long while to realize that, like, yeah, just everything is messed up. Where Bo then has been given some tablets and has been told, you must always drink these with water. You must drink them with water. And he takes a tablet, goes to grab his bottle of water, and lo and behold, it's empty. And the taps don't work in his house. And he looks outside, and it's kind of like chaos. And there's people stabbing each other and fighting and murdering and doing all manner of stuff. And across the street is the convenience store with a load of bottled water. And he has to kind of fight his anxiety to stay inside, to go out there and have this drink that he thinks he needs for this tablet. And kind of just that in itself kind of describes what the whole point of this movie is. Is it's Bo's interpretation of the world and the hurdles that have been put in front of him. and ultimately, kind of, you know, a little way into the movie, Bo gets a phone call, a very strange phone call, like anything with this movie, where he finds out that his mother has died, and he basically embarks on a journey to get home, to help kind of bury his mother and you know, come to terms with her death or seeming death. Because, you know, I think it's just kind of, I learned very early to just take like everything with a pinch of salt that I'm being told and seen.
Yeah.
You know, Bo gets hit by a car, and the next minute he wakes up in a hospital or in a teenage girl's room, and he's got this woman who says she's hit him, who's married to a doctor, and they're now caring for him. And I'm like, okay, what's happening here? And the whole movie just is doing this the whole time, and it's intentionally trying to distort you and make you feel confused. And I have to say that I would, you know, 95, if not higher, percent of movies like this, I think I'd have to turn off, because I wouldn't be able to handle it. It would just piss me off too much. But there was something just kind, you know, engaging with this, and I think it is, you know, not necessarily the movie itself. You know, you touched upon it already, that it's not probably the movie, but it was more like going on this journey whilst being aware of the journey we've already been on with Ari, and kind of knowing that you need to watch this to then get ready for what's going to come next. And it's a weird experience. You know, we've had this with, you know, the few filmmakers that have become prevalent whilst we're doing the podcast, you know, Jordan and Ari being kind of, you know, the two main ones, Flanagan in the TV world. And I think kind of with Jordan, I think it's like, yeah, you know, I can easily see him doing something that's just going to be like a comedy or something that's so adjacent from the genre. And I think we've said, like, with Ari, it always feels like he's going to do something that is at least batshit crazy, you know? And I think, like, that's why you know that you've got to kind of keep involved with it. I think it's the same with, like, Robert Eggers. I think that's what we said with him, that, like, with Eggers, he may not always do something that we love, you know, and it may not be like land with us like The Northman. I could easily see him doing a movie that just I find boring and mundane and I don't want to watch, because it's just he's gone just to a place that I'm not interested in. But I will always respect and want to watch what he does. And I think that's the same with Ari, where I just know that it's going to be batshit, and I need to just absorb what that is. And that certainly was what this movie was.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like, for me, that's already happened with Robert, because The Witch is that movie to me. Of, like, I do massively respect it, and I get why everyone loves it, but I've tried to rewatch it, and I don't like that film, and I wish I did, because of how much I adore, obviously, mostly The Lighthouse and definitely The Northman as well. So it is weird for me that it kind of happened in reverse in that case. But yeah, this movie's just insane. Like, it's, you can't talk about this like a normal film. You can't have a conversation about this like a normal film. And what did you like it? And let's break it down critically, because I honestly don't think it exists in that same space. Like, it's, I don't think it's trying to be like, I really don't want to get so like, because I would never say this about hardly any films, but I genuinely don't think this is trying to be entertainment or anything. Like, you really do just have to view this like a piece of art. And, like, I fucking hate that in general, because I think it's just, like, taken away from what, you know, my favorite movie of this year is Mission Impossible, because it was the movie that entertained me the most. So that's where I come from watching most films. But I think this is, you have to judge it for what it is. And I think he was trying to make something that I've never seen a film like this, truly. Like, I can't remotely compare this to anything else. I can't necessarily say I liked it, but I certainly didn't hate it either. It just was an experience that it had some really cool moments. It had some unbearably boring moments for me as well. Certainly towards the end, which I think did sour me, because it was like, it was up and down and up and down. but then it went really down at the end for me. And I think that's kind of what killed it, where like had this ended maybe 30 minutes earlier, I would have probably been a lot more hot on it. Because when we get to what the conclusion of this film is, I just found it so unsatisfying. You know, but it is almost like an epilogue, really, because, you know, you already briefly mentioned the attic, but it feels like that was the end of the film. And it should have been the end of the film, but it's not. There's at least another 25, probably 30 minutes after that. Because, yeah, this movie is a mammoth, you know, like it's... The runtime is just crazy, you know, like I get it, we're the people that talk about that the most, but I feel like watching it right now is a good time to talk about this, because not only did we discuss God is a Bullet, which was 2.5 hours long that we really liked, but then yeah, seeing Mission Impossible, seeing Oppenheimer, which is 3 hours, again, like
we're well equipped right now.
Yeah, like I get that they're all different genres and stuff, but I think ultimately that's not important, because we're not even typically talking about this like a traditional horror film. We're just talking about films here. And like the run times of those really long films, we just discussed those three, were all fantastic and it didn't matter. So like I think I'm in a good place right now to watch a long film and not care about the runtime. Whereas I think this one is just egregious, where it's... You realize early on that it's just going to be one of those films where the scenes are just going to go on for too long. Like, we go from place to place, and the transitions between places take so long. You know, the transition from when he wakes up in that in the girl's bedroom and that kind of sequence of the film, to then getting to when he's like wandering around the woods. There's just like such a huge transitional period where like almost nothing happens. You know, once you get the finale of that part, which is great. And I think that's why it's a shame, because yeah, going back to the start and going over like what you discussed, I loved everything in the apartment. That was what worked so well for me. And I think if this was just,
yeah,
Bo as an individual struggles with everything. It's a surrealist movie, so everything's crazy heightened, and it's just watch Bo try and do the most simplest tasks that we in our everyday would do and don't think twice about. But for him, it is these epic cinematic journeys. Like the water is such a good example of it. You know, you hear that scene early on, you have to take it with water, and you think to yourself, like, why is that going to be important? And it's just such a simple bit, and then you've already set up the absolute chaos that is outside, you know, let alone the things that you mentioned, but there's like a million things going on outside that are all as chaotic as the other one. You know, it felt like almost post-apocalyptic, just how clearly unrealistic. Like, there isn't a single place in America that is actually like this.
It's
just crazy. And like, and so I think I got it straight away from these early apartment scenes, where I was like, oh, I get the surrealist part of it now, that it is, like you say, it's Bo's interpretation of things in life, which, sure, he might live on a shit street and he might occasionally have someone chase after him, but it's not going to be as intense as what we saw in those scenes. And so him having this like little side quest to get water, and him like leaving the phone book, and you know that's going to be an issue, and then like him paying and him constantly looking over his shoulder and seeing all of these people just funnel into his apartment,
not having the right money, and
it's so, I loved that, where I was like, oh, like I was feeling the anxiety, like my palms were getting sweaty, where I was like, oh, that's what this film's gonna be about. It's about showing extreme anxiety in these really simple scenarios, which I thought was great. Even like when we first go to the apartment and there's the little poster about the spider, and I was like, and obviously, yeah, the second he opens the apartment, you see the spider on the ground and it just, you know, scampers under the couch.
Off under the sofa, and I'm like, great.
Yeah, and I'm like, oh, I love that, because again, it's just anxiety inducing, and I feel like that's what that most of this film was trying to be, and that's what works so well, was I felt that tension, anxiety, and sick in my stomach for Bo, where I was just like, man, I just want him to be normal for him. I just want him to be able to have some water. Like, is that genuinely how low the bar is? And he can't get these simple things. So I think my favorite part of the movie by far was the note sequence. Was so fantastic, where these like random notes are being fired under Bo's door at night, where they're complaining about him listening to music, but there's just no sound. And then it's like the next note says, wait, you turned it up when I told you to turn it down? Like, yeah. I loved that one. But then when it slid and it flew perfectly to right next to Bo's bed, so he didn't even have to get up, I was like, oh, this is where the surrealist stuff makes perfect sense. Because, like, of course that couldn't happen. But just visually, in the movie, it looked so good. Because we'd already seen Bo get up multiple times. So that time, he could just glance and see the note. So, like, man, this movie was really working for me, like, that first 40 minutes. It was really firing. I think it's up until he gets hit by the car, and then we transition into Act 2. Again, I'm still on board at this point, but I realized the movie was going to be a lot bigger and deal with a lot more, you know, that's when you get into, you know, when he kind of takes the drugs and we get, like, the flashback sequence and stuff. Like, that's when you're really kind of extrapolating and you're going into the actual issues with his mother and what this film's, like, really about. And, yeah, I missed the smaller scope of early on. Where, like, I get that. That's not what this film's trying to be. This is massive in scope. You know, this is clearly, like, Ari's dream film. And it just has so many crazy sequences that fold into one another. And the way they transition. Like, it really is just a crazy mind map of an experience that, again, whilst isn't, to me, as enjoyable as a lot of others. But I do put it up there with something like seeing a... When you see a Christopher Nolan movie or even a Quentin Tarantino movie, it's like, you know that that's the only person that could have made that film because of the short choices and everything. It's just, it has such a crazy craft to it. And whilst this isn't anywhere near the quality of those directors for me, certainly for my own personal enjoyment, it still had that feeling of like you're watching a incredibly creative person pull this off. And even though I wish this was, listen, if this was a 90-minute film about Beau's struggles in his apartment, it would have been one of my favorite movies of the year. Like, yeah. It was so good, but it's not that. And so you then have to judge what it is, and it's just this crazy, you know, thing. We'll get into kind of the rest of the movie, but yeah, I want to hear your overall thoughts, even if you can give them, because like I say, I don't think you can talk about this in like a traditional movie sense, where like even now I've discussed it, I sound really positive because I've talked about like my favorite part mostly, which is only 40 minutes of a 3-hour movie. And like I say, I don't hate it either. It's just, it's hard for me to even process what I think about this film. But what did you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely with you in the fact that the apartment stuff was great. And it really, I thought it was going to be a movie that was, it was almost making me feel like I was becoming Bo and getting this anxiousness and like, you know, just anxiety over everything. And just like his phone rings. And I'm like, oh, fuck, what's that going to be? Yeah. And like just everything. And it had done such a good job to get me into that mindset. And where like I knew everything I was seeing wasn't real, but I kind of understood the world I was in because I understood I was in Bo's head and I knew that like he was troubled and kind of when he, you know, even to the point that it like, you know, he has these people that take over his apartment. He eventually gets his apartment back and takes a bath and then just like looks up and I'm just like, all of that, I was like, I don't know why there's a giant man that's like playing Spider-Man on the ceiling of your bathroom, but it still made sense. Do you know what I mean? In this kind of world. Mm. And I don't know why, but yeah, after he got hit by the car, it just, I lost all concept of the rules and where I was at. And I had to quickly readjust and I didn't adjust as quickly as I wanted to. And that I had to kind of just accept that, yeah, that isn't the movie. And it is just this, like you said, bigger scope, but just less what I wanted. And it, you know, there were multiple scenes where, you know, the theatre production one in particular, where it just kind of like, I was like, man, you've gone to a whole other plane at this point where I'm like, I'm not sure whether I'm there with you. And just like this, you know, I felt like they were throwing, you know, so many themes and so many messages at you at that point. You know, we've got the kind of the overbearing mother, the kind of the story that she tells about his conception and what happened to his dad to kind of give him this fear of women, this kind of this love interest from an early age that, you know, has got to come back at some point with that note that's left, you know, with the kind of, you know, all of this stuff. And then the fact that he's being like, terrorized by this ex-army vet that wants to kill him, that's like just armed to the teeth with all this stuff, that's like the threat throughout the second half of the movie, and just all of these things where I was like, man, I just like, it's so chaotic that it's hurting my brain, and I had to stop thinking about it really and just let the chaos unfold. And I'm glad I did, because yeah, when we get to kind of the final act of him being at home, there are just so many parts of that where it gets crazier and crazier and crazier, you know, from the point of him arriving, you know, post his mum's wake, to kind of come to terms with that and missing that, to kind of the guest arriving, to everything that transpires with that, and so on and so forth, until we get to the attic. It really did get more and more crazy. And it was when I was like, well, it can't get really any more crazy than what it does. And then it did what it did. And I'm with you that, like, I think that should have, and I think the movie needed to end abruptly there, you know, either with kind of, you know, Bo, you know, killing himself, killing someone, you know, whatever it was to end, because I think when we get this kind of, you know, and I can see what it's doing, and you know, what it's trying to symbolize in particular when he's taking the boat into the cave, you know, it's very in your face, but it's just, I felt that whole trial and kind of the way that it slowly ended, just it really did lose me, and it did feel anticlimactic. And yeah, I think, probably how I just, because it's just so hard to describe how you think about this movie, because I almost feel like I've watched a series of TV.
Yeah.
You know, when we spoke about it earlier, when we were saying about how to, you know, can't imagine watching this in a cinema, I cannot fathom watching this movie in one go.
Yeah.
Like, I can't. Like, there was no way I was watching this in one go. Like, I tried to give a good chunk of it, but there was just, there are so many chapter points that feel like an end of a TV episode where I'm like, oh, okay, he's been hit by the car. I feel like that's end of episode one, you know? And then it's like, you know, it's probably like a 4 or 5 part mini series is what I feel like I've watched.
Yeah, it definitely is.
For me, I kind of, loved the first part. You know, I loved all of the stuff with him in the apartment. I think kind of the stuff with him with the doctor and him like being stitched up and all of that stuff was kind of slow and was all right in the end. I think the stuff with the play and all of that kind of lost me. I liked the flashbacks, and then I liked the finale at his mum's house, but then it really, you know, probably the bit I liked least was the finale, you know, the actual final scenes of the movie. So kind of, you know, combine all of those scenes together and all of those thoughts, I'm like, yeah, I didn't dislike this movie, but certainly, like, I find it hard to talk about. I find it hard to recommend to anyone. You know, I don't know an individual that I would meet or a listener that I would say, you know, yeah, go watch Poe's Afraid. Like, you know, and even in, like, you know, your most psychotic of recommendations that you give to strangers and recommending Martyrs, there's at least like a rationale behind that.
Yeah.
Whereas with this, I'm just like, you know, what would I even be trying to say to that person to like recommend it to them?
Like, I also think, like you say, if this is a movie that fully lands for you, that is a 10 out of 10, it's still hard to recommend because of what it is. Whereas I think for us, we are just so torn on a lot of this that it ultimately, the only way this was ever going to be like a strong recommendation is if this ended up being like our number one film of the year, because it's so weird. It's not like anything else. You can't even gauge. It'd be so hard to find out what someone's tastes are to then be like, do you know what? I reckon Bo is Afraid would be the one that you would really like, because it really does meld so many different genres together. I think with on Wikipedia it's described as a surrealist tragicomedy horror film, which is a very good description. I agree with it, and I do think it's in that order. Like, I think surrealist is absolutely the main thing going on here, where I think right off the bat, and I think typically we're not that type of person either, which probably speaks about how much we actually did enjoy most of this film, is that, you know, we like things to be grounded and matter. And I think when, like, say, you know, you rightly said, you really do get to a point where you go, well, did any of this really happen? And we've always said, like, typically when that's the case, that's not something we enjoy. You know, I certainly don't like that. Yeah, like, it really does annoy me where I'm like, okay, well, if nothing matters, what is the point of any of this? And for me, that's why I think the ending sucks, because the way the ending happened, where I was like, was that the end? Or is it not the end? I really don't know. So I think that's why I really didn't like the ending of this one. And that was one of the main surrealist parts that didn't work, because, I'll come back to that. But yeah, with the tragic comedy, I definitely think that is, again, a great description of this, of like, it is funny, but it is a lot of, it's the exact same sense of humor that Midsommar had. In particular, those sex scenes towards the end of Midsommar, where it was like, this is played for laughs, and it made me laugh. It got laughs in the audience when we saw Midsommar, because you're seeing something so horrific and so out of left field. And when you actually, like, said out loud what you're seeing, it's really messed up, and it's not a laughing matter at all. But the way Ari presents it in that movie, it is hilarious. And I feel like that is that was always what I thought. When I heard Nightmare Comedy years ago, I always thought about that scene in Midsommar, where I was like, oh, it's going to be that. And I think it did end up being that for a lot of cases, where you're laughing at things that you probably shouldn't laugh at. Like, I think one of the best ways this movie got me was in that second act, in the transition, when he's kind of waking up and this family's almost adopted him, is like, he walks outside and the camera just slowly pans. And it's just a guy just standing there, just in the garden. And it killed me, just how, like, unbelievable. Like, it was so weird. And I was just like, what? Like, why is this guy here? Like, it proper killed me. And it was so clearly meant for that. But then again, I think the intention of Ari was so right here, because he then explains who this character is and why he is the way he is, which is so sympathetic. And you're then feeling bad that you laughed at this individual. And I think that, again, was purely the intent. And I think so it's those moments where this movie works so well. But I do think it becomes less funny as we get on, because I definitely think the apartment, all those jokes with the notes, with the water, with the spider, with the Spider-Man, like, all of that stuff worked. But then, like you say, when you get to, like, the theater bit, which I'll get to, but, like, I don't think any of that's really played for laughs, in my opinion.
It just becomes like a weird twisted drama at this point.
Yeah, exactly. Which, is interesting. But yeah, I think with the second part, with, like, the adopted family, I'm totally with you, where it was such a huge shift that where I was like, wait, what's going on, and why are these people taking him in? So I took at least a good 10 or 15 minutes to adapt to it. The good thing is the movie doesn't move fast, so it gives you that time to adapt in every single shift
for an hour.
Exactly, like, that always happens with every shift. Like, you never have to lose, you know, worried about losing track of where you are, because you'll always be grounded for a while. But then I did give it the time where I was like, okay, I want to know what's going on here. Okay, this teenage daughter is, like, really messed up. What's going to happen with her? And then the mum character was what really intrigued me, because she kind of has the moment where she writes a secret note on his, like, under his drink. And you're like, oh, what's going on? Like, she knows something about Bo or something. And then she gives him the TV remote and tells him what channel to put on, which is a really weird scene, the way that unfolds. Like, I'd almost forgot how utterly preposterous that is. With this whole, like, rewind fast forward mechanic. But then the way that ended, when he then leaves the family and the mum is just like, no, fuck him, kill him, like, that was super disappointing. So that to me was the first disappointment of the film. Because up until that point, I'd loved the apartment stuff. I wasn't on board with the shift, but I'd given it the benefit of the doubt. But then the fact that he then just left that family, and to me that felt so unsatisfying. You know, the fact that the kind of the guy that was there just became, like you say, the tool. He just became random antagonist for the rest of the film. And then those other three members of that family basically meant nothing. Yeah, I was just like, I was like, that was annoying. So that was disappointing to me. Then when we transition into the theater stuff, it was like, oh, I don't care now. So, like, when it's like the pregnant woman who he's kind of befriends, and he starts having this friendship with her, and he gives her like the ornament that he bought for his mum and stuff, like, I just didn't care at that point. I think she to me was the most pointless character in the whole film.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if that's just because I was done at that point in terms of getting attached to other characters that weren't Bo. But I was just like, nah, because you're just going to be gone in 30 minutes. So I just didn't care. So that was when it was like, that's when they start to burn you, knowing that you're just going to move from place to place. And also knowing that clearly there's a final destination. Like, there's this big showdown at his mum's, you know, wake, and you know you're getting to that place. So getting to the third different place that wasn't that place, I was just like, nah, we need to wrap this up. And it was a shame, because when we got to the actual theater and what transpires there with kind of Bo, this is when I think we're at our most kind of Bo's in his own head.
Yeah.
And we're kind of seeing, because he's basically picturing himself as the protagonist of the story. But I really liked that, the way that transpired. And visually, it was awesome. Like, this part fully just felt like a video game, where you can just break all the rules and just have 50 different art styles in one. You know, it's one of my favorite things about video games like that, where you can just go 2D, 3D, and has this cell shaded, and has this super realistic style. And I love doing when games do stuff like that. And that's, you don't see that in movies too often, for good reason, because it makes no goddamn sense at all. But luckily, Ari doesn't confine himself to these normal rules of filmmaking. So he just put everything in there. And I did like those sequences. But then, yeah, then getting to the actual house, it was like, okay, now the movie feels like it's almost starting now. Of like, oh, here's the story part. Now we're getting the childhood friend resolution. We're getting the mum payoff. We're getting all the answers to Bo's backstory as to why he is who he is. And it's like, man, we're 2 hours in at this point, and we're only just now getting the actual bulk of the story. Which, again, is what I would say if I was judging this like a normal film. But I feel like I can't, because it's just impossible.
It's weird, though, isn't it, that we're giving it, like, I feel like at times we're giving it good. Half.
Yeah, I agree, but I do think ultimately we both did enjoy it more than we didn't.
Yeah, true, but I just feel like there are some things that would just, like, piss me off so much, like I say, about almost anything that I would ever watch, and I'm just like, eh, well, you know, it's just Bo, isn't it? Like, I don't know what it is, and that's why I think it's important to pinpoint it, that like, well, not to more state that I can't pinpoint it, that I don't know why I feel like I can give this a pass. I don't know whether it is.
I don't even know if I am. I feel like I am, because I do like it, but I'm also saying, I think fairly clearly that, like, this movie does have so many issues. But the thing is, I feel like all of those issues are, like, clearly intentional. That's what's weird. Exactly. Is you're not talking about this, we're going, oh, well, here's where Ari thought he was doing one thing, but he ended up doing another. I didn't feel that once.
Like, the thing about it is that I've watched movies that I've liked a lot more this year.
Yeah.
That I will not think about ever again. I watched it, I really liked it, and I won't think about it. I've thought about this movie a lot since finishing it. But then likewise, I will see a lot of movies that I like less than this that I'll watch again. I will never watch this movie again. Like, never. It's far too long. It's just too crazy. And so, like, I just feel that, like, you know, push and pull is also just uniquely Bo is Afraid. What movie would you even, like, put this into comparison with that we've done for the show?
Yeah, there really isn't anything. I think what you just said is so true, because I think a movie like Sick that we saw earlier this year is so much more enjoyable and entertaining, first and foremost, definitely as a horror film as well. But it was also just like, we both just saw it. It was a really fun slasher, and we had a good time. And we'd probably both go, yeah, I'd watch that again in the future, because it'd be fun. Whereas it was pretty forgettable, because it doesn't have anything kind of crazy about it. Whereas this is so... it's such an unbelievable experience that I will put it in the same bracket, even though I enjoyed the other movie so much more, like the best that I've seen this year. You know, we discussed about a month ago talking about the state of film this year and how like it wasn't a memorable year. But like, even in the last month now, I would put this up there with stuff like Mission Impossible and Oppenheimer, where I'd be like, oh, those are the movies that I'll remember I saw in 2023. Even though I clearly didn't enjoy this as much as those two.
Yeah, strange, isn't it?
But like, it's very weird.
Yeah, I think that's just like my overall thoughts on it, and like, especially because I think like someone that's listening to this wanting to know whether they should watch Bo is Afraid or not. Like, I think the answer is you've got to decide for yourself. Like, mm-hmm. I I think this is the first time I'm gonna like abscond from giving a recommendation. Where I'm like, I don't think I can give a recommendation on this movie one way or another, because I've never met a human being that I would recommend this movie to. But I also, you know, I had a weird time watching it, and so, you know, there are people that are, like you say, people are going to think this is a masterpiece, and there are people that are going to think it's utter garbage. And I think both are valid for that human being that watched it. And I feel like I'm sat somewhere in the middle. And yeah, so it's just, it was a truly weird experience. I think that's my final thought on it, is that, you know, it was just, I never knew what was going to happen. And whenever I thought things were going to happen, I think, like, even scenes like the whole, I don't want to like spoil too much, but the whole visitor, like when he arrives home post the week, that arrives at the house, and how that transpires to the conclusion. like, I was not expecting that.
No.
And when that happened, and I realized it had gone the other way, like, I was like so shocked by it, and like genuinely freaked out. Like, I was as freaked out as Bo in that moment, by what had just happened, and the way they were like frozen like that. And it was just, you know, it's images like that, and let alone images like what was in the attic, that are gonna like stick with me in a true horror, like, fucked up movie sense. And then there's going to be scenes like the, you know, the early apartment scenes that were this kind of really enticing, captivating, you know, like I say, this kind of being in the lens of someone that's clearly got, you know, these mental health issues, and understanding their struggle, and understanding that, like, you know, we go to the doctors and they say to us, yeah, here's some tablets, take it with water all the time. And we're like, yeah, cool, whatever. And then you just neck them and don't even think about it. And you never give it a second thought. And it really is just a guidance. But he took it as like, you're going to fucking die if you don't like neck a bottle of water with these. And like, yeah, those people absolutely exist. And like, and absolutely have that issue. And it can be crippling, you know, to the point that, what we saw with Bo, and yeah, like that, you know, those opening scenes will really stick with me. And I think I would prefer if the movie had been that throughout, because that really landed. But, you know, ultimately the madman that is Ari Aster just took me on one hell of a journey that was beyond just that. And I came out the other side somehow.
Yeah, it really is one of those ones that you feel like, man, I survived Bo is Afraid. Like, I can finally move on. Because, yeah, I think those horror scenes are crazy. You know, like, those in particular, like that bedroom scene that you mentioned, I do think that is definitely one of the best scenes of the film. And I think that's when you get reminded, like, oh, yeah, that's the guy that made those two films. Because he's still got it in him, you know. He just chose to make something vastly different to those two films. But when he wants to bring it out, he knows it almost better than anyone else. But, yeah, as far as this goes, like, this was almost exactly what I thought it would be. In the sense of, like, there's a reason why we were kind of putting it off. You know, for multiple of different reasons, and like the runtime and stuff, but because I feel like ultimately it just wasn't what I wanted him to do. And even, you know, having come to terms with it over years, it was still just like seeing it was believing. And having now seen it, I'm like, yep, he made what I thought he, you know, wanted to make, and arguably he might be the only person in the world that wanted him to make this movie. But he did it, and I'm glad I've now witnessed that experience. I would be unbelievably devastated if Ari chose to make something like this again. Because I think you're allowed one of these, you know. Yeah. Everyone can do one of these. It's fine. Like, I'm not going to be that protective over your filmography that every movie you have to make is for your audience. But you can't do this again. If he says Bo is Afraid 2 is his next movie, he's done. Like, you got to stop. You got to keep that runtime under at least 2 hours, you know, in the next one, because it's just unfathomably
large. You got to make a movie
You know, you can't make a movie that people might actually want to see, because this is just crazy. And like I say, I'm glad this exists. I think this is one of those movies that in years to come, and Joaquin has a few of these as well in his career, where it's like almost no one saw them at the time. But in years later, they'll be like, wait, what the hell is this? He made a 3-hour movie. And then it'll be like, wait, what, it's from the director of Midsommar? What the hell is this? And someone will just randomly watch it with no other, you know, kind of preconceptions, and just be floored by it, and just be like, what is this experience? Because it really is an experience that I'm glad exists for people. It's just so unlike anything else.
I don't know whether I am glad it exists for people. Like, I don't know. But that is a good point, that, like, we've spent this long talking about the movie, and we've spent a lot of time talking about Ari Aster, but, like, mm-hmm. You know, what about Joaquin Phoenix? Like, you know, he, you know, him in Joker was arguably one of our favorite performances of that year. And, you know, we know he's an incredible actor, and seeing him in that role as Joker was amazing. And when he got cast in Beau Is Afraid, you know, like, post seeing this, you know, what did you make of his performance in this?
Really interesting. Like, I think the point she made about the mental health stuff is, I think, clearly why he wanted to do this, because this is showing your chops as an actor. This is another one of those movies, similar where I talked about it, where my only kind of criticism of Times of Joker as a film was that it felt like it was just an awesome acting reel. And I feel like this typically, there's going to be so many sequences where you go, oh, this is such an unbelievable portrayal of this character, you know, where it's not. In a lot of ways, Joker is so cool, and it's funny that he got adopted as this kind of cool character, because I think his take on it was different to every other version of Joker that we've seen, which is typically more of a cool character. You know, his was supposed to be a more realistic kind of mental health portrayal of that character. But I think this really is like a guy, the way he looks throughout this movie, the way he speaks, he has one of the most like timid voices, you know, and he kind of stutters his way through sentences, and it's so hard to even understand what he's saying at times. And it's the most like unconventional lead character for a film I've probably ever seen, let alone the lead character of a 3-hour movie, where it's just like, man, it really, you do get tired of it at times, where you almost feel like a parent, where I'm like, God damn it, Beau, just sort yourself out. And then you kind of catch yourself being like, no, it's not his fault, like, this is why. And I don't know, I think it just works. Like, again, it's, I totally get, again, why Ari made this. And then the second point would be like, I totally get why Joaquin wanted to do this. Like, I could just see his face reading the script and be like, oh yeah, this is a piece of me. And he already knew, like, yeah, no one's going to see this, but like, I'm going to fucking love doing this. So I think it worked for him. What did you think of him?
Yeah, like, I think it was just such a you know, someone that's, you know, with Joker, it is a different take on Joker, but it's still very much in your face. And I think with this, it was just like, he just felt like a broken, damaged man. And mm-hmm. such, like you say, I think it was his vocal performance more than anything. Like, there were times where I wasn't even sure whether the words were coming out of his mouth when he was talking, because he was mm-hmm. that quiet and that timid. And I think, yeah, like, as I was getting a chunk through the movie, I kind of became aware that, like, oh yeah, like, he's in this, you know, he is our lead, and like, it's an actor that I'm incredibly excited to see in this role, and I'm not being blown away by it, like, because it's not in my face, and it's because it's this subtle, crazy, you know, level performance that you're not used to seeing when you're trying to, you know, I don't think you could put a particular scene in a CV, you know, if he was putting together a video clip, be like, yeah. Oh yeah, here's my acting chops. Like, what would he put from this movie in it? But yeah. if he could say to like someone, well, if you got a spare 3 hours, whack this on,
yeah.
Be like, I'm fucking mental. And yeah. Like, they'd go, yeah, you got chops, mate. But like, you couldn't extract like a 1-minute segment and be like, man, what powerful performance that was. You know, it is just that he lost his mind through the entire 3 hours of this movie, therefore must have done that for the entirety of the shoot of this movie, which is a little bit terrifying.
I feel like this almost is the counter opposite of Joker, where every scene he's in Joker, he's the lead character. He's what's driving every scene forward. Whereas it's almost the opposite. Like, Bo, this is a classic, what we've talked about before, where this is a character, a main character of a film. Exactly. Where it's the characters doing stuff to him. You know, like, typically, especially when he wakes up in the second kind of act, like, that's constantly, that family is doing things to him. It's the teenage daughter doing things to him. It's the mom doing things to him. Then typically when we get to the theater, it's them presenting things to him. Like, he's never the driving factor. He's just reacting to what's going on around him. So I think that's why it's such an interesting juxtaposition after that movie, where he's the driving for everything. Whereas this is more like a, how can you just sell it as mostly reacting, but then, yeah, like you say, when it's mostly through just that voice performance, because that is crazy good. But yeah, this was a mental film. Like, I think for recommendations, like, I've kind of avoided recommendations a few times, probably more than you have on the podcast, yeah. Where I just don't know. Typically when it's like there's good and there's bad, it's just difficult. Whereas with this one, like, there's no way I could recommend this. Like, just no way. And, like, I'm so glad I watched this, truly. And I think I mostly had a good time with it. But there is, without a shadow of a doubt, I could never recommend this to someone. Because it's most certainly with that runtime, like, I really take that into considerations for recommendations. And if I'm recommending you something that's 3 hours long, it needs to be, like, unbelievable.
The force,
yeah. Yeah, like, it needs to be those directors that really earn it with, you know, something like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. If anyone has ever thought about seeing that film and looked at the runtime and went, nah, I don't fancy it, you are so unbelievably wrong. Like, the runtime is not even remotely consequential in any discussion surrounding that film. And that's how all great films should be. And I feel like Oppenheimer is identical as well. It's just an amazing film, and you shouldn't care about that runtime. Whereas with this, it's the massive elephant in the room, where even if you're someone that might like this sort of thing, I feel like you might just get worn out by it, let alone the fact that I think this is so unbelievably niche that I wouldn't even know what type of person I'd recommend this to. But yeah, I can only speak for myself and say that I'm really glad I saw this. Like, it will stay with me for better or worse, but it's certainly not, you know, one of the best movies of the year. Like, it's certainly not going to feature on any lists of ours or anything like that, especially because it's such a weird genre thing as well. That, like, there is a lot of horror in here. I'm certainly glad we had this conversation, but it is definitely, quote-unquote, more than just a horror film. But yeah, I'm glad I saw it. It, like I say, it's not for everyone, but I'm glad I can finally exist now, because it was one that I'd seen.
I'm glad I can finally exist now.
Yeah, like, for me, it's weird when a big movie comes out that I feel like I should have my say on it and my opinion on it that I haven't. And it's one of the only ones. Like, I see everything I want to see. Like, and so this was one of the few that slipped through the cracks where I was like, oh, yeah, I just haven't seen this yet. And I'm glad it wasn't, you know, getting to the year after and I still lived in a world where I just hadn't seen Ari Aster's next film. Like, that would have just been crazy to me. So, yeah, the completionist in me is very happy, but I will never, ever watch this film ever again under no circumstances. And but you know what, that's fine a lot of the time.
Yeah,
that was our discussion finally on Bo is Afraid. We'll take a quick break and we will be right back. Yeah, we did actually have a nice little random question this week on Twitter from Paul, who just says, in a world where Bo is afraid, which Meg is better, one or two? So clearly he's clearly he's megged out of his skull right now.
Yeah, megged off his face, isn't he, right now?
Yeah. He also added, the answer is both are awesome. So, which I can tell you, that's a lie, because I've seen the first one. I can't comment on the second one.
I was going to say, that's a lie. I've seen the first one, and I believe it's probably the best one.
No, see, I disagree with that. I do think the second one will be better. Because I think I liked the trailer for two more than the entirety of the first film.
Oh, how did this become a Meg ribbon?
I really want to talk about it, because I think I'll tell you what, after watching Bo is Afraid, I couldn't think of a better palate cleanser right now than watching the Meg.
I mean, you are 100% correct. like nothing would be a better like accoutrement to Beau's Afraid than that.
Yeah, definitely. I need the least like using my brain film possible because yeah, I just want to watch Dumb Fun, which actually moving swiftly on is just to quickly talk about it. I am watching probably the perfect thing to get my brain off it. Watching a bit of TV. Obviously, I talked about watching or wanting to watch American Horror Story, but I didn't decide to go with that. Decided to go with the newer TV show Twisted Metal, which I've seen about three episodes. No, that's way too much because that's like the opposite. You know it. Like,
I know it.
Listen, I love it because the last couple of conversations we've had, it's like, you know, I need to find the right time for From, and you know that time is not now.
You knew you were being a little bitch saying you were going to watch it this year, and then like the next week you're finding.
Yeah, I probably won't. Yeah.
Reasons to not watch it, but I still don't like it.
Exactly, especially because like when season, if you can tell me when I'm going to see season three, I'll watch it. But you don't have those answers.
Like in a long ass time from now, that's the answer.
That's not good enough because that's already the answer to too many TV shows that I'm invested in.
To all TV.
But yeah, I guess I didn't really go against what I said because obviously with Twisted Metal, I was like, I guess it could continue. But I always like saw this as just a one and done type thing. And obviously it's not a super serious thing, you know, it's supposed to be just this wacky TV show. And yeah, it's delivering what I want. Like it's the episodes are like 25 minutes when you don't include like the intro and the credits. Yeah. And it's fun. Like I really liked episode one. I think they created what this world is brilliantly. And my biggest takeaway was like, man, I'd love to see this game. Because it's funny, right? Like Twisted Metal, and I've actually recently been playing 1 and 2 on the PlayStation 5 because they're available on there, and really having a lot of fun. But those are arena car combat games, and to my knowledge, that's always been what the franchise is. And we haven't had one for 11 years since Twisted Metal 2012 on PlayStation 3, two generations ago. But I'm pretty sure it was never what we're presented in the TV world, which is a post-apocalyptic world where you are delivering from city to city, and then within the confines of these safe havens is just the absolute carnage of the car combat. And I'm like, in the TV world has presented what Twisted Metal 2024 coming exclusively to the PlayStation 5 next year should be. But that game doesn't exist because that would be awesome, especially with today's, you know, the way the consoles run and that. You could easily pull that off where you would have all of the story and the cutscenes in these little safe havens meeting characters, but then all of the gameplay would just be getting from place to place and trying to survive with as much of your loot as possible. Like
this is absolutely PS4 era, like Sony, where it's like, let's get the IP of like God of War. Where it's like, yeah, this game did gangbusters and was hugely popular, but my God, it was a weird like subgenre. And let's just turn it into like this beautiful story-driven narrative of father and son in the world of God of War. And it's like, yeah, let's make Twisted Metal like this post-apocalyptic world where there's this car carnage, but it's not the one and only thing that this thing is. And yeah, it really feels like their MO that they never got around to doing it.
Yeah, like I've not played it, but it sounds similar to what Days Gone is, because I know that's kind of driving around and stuff. And so I feel like it should have been, kind of like that. But yeah, not that, because not zombies, but, you know, I don't want it to be car on car combat. But yeah, like, I don't know, just seeing that in that world, it's awesome. And it did annoy me because I'm like, I'm enjoying this TV show. It's really fun. And it's funny as well. Like Anthony Mackie is especially funny. I'm glad, like I've always found him funny, but he typically doesn't just do straight comedy. Whereas this is like, it's just comedy. Like that is what this is. And so I think that's why it's not kind of super relevant. Like we're obviously not going to like cover it, especially because it's definitely not horror. But it's got violence in it and it is funny. But no, I think it's a good palate cleanser for right now. Like I'm enjoying, you can just whack it on and it's such an easy watch. And it's in some ways as well, it is like the counter opposite to The Last of Us. That was this like, it's prestige television. You really have to sit with it and you have to let these characters kind of tell you this unbelievable story with these incredible performances. And it's based upon, you know, arguably two of the greatest video games Sony's ever put out and arguably two of the greatest video games ever made in recent generations. Whereas this is like, yeah, just this random IP that everyone's kind of forgot even existed. And they've just made a fun TV show. So yeah, I'm having a good time with it. I'm excited for you to watch it because I think you'll like this a lot.
I definitely, like, once I stop watching 3-hour fucking movies for the podcast, Maybe watch some other stuff.
Oh, what can we find for next? I think we've done them all, you know. I think we've watched all of the long films.
So many long ass movies lately. It's crazy.
Yeah. But yeah, good times. But yeah, there'll be a lot of TV discussing. Like I say, there's at least for this year, like I say, we already had our pretty interesting conversation about TV going forward last year, but we've got some stuff to look forward to this year. So
did you ever watch Wednesday?
No, I didn't.
No, because I've only got the finale to watch. I've been watching that, and it confuses me so much as to what it is, because I originally, when I started watching it, and like, it has quite a violent opening scene, and then for a while it's kind of like, it feels like it should be more like the Goosebumps movie that came out with Jack Black, where it should be like a little bit more hardcore than that, but a really good recommendation for people with young children to be like, okay, this is like a good gateway, but it's not. But it is like, it's majority of that, but then it just has some shit in it that's way too dark, where you can't let a, you know, 8, 9, 10 year old watch it. And so it feels like a very weird thing where I'm like, I'm kind of enjoying it, but like, I wish it was either darker, preferably, because that's what I want to watch, or lighter, so I knew what it was targeted at. Do you know what I mean? And I'm just like, I'm not quite sure why you exist in this weird level where, you know, I think it's got like an age rating, not like a 12 plus or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, it's probably where it's like at, where it's like probably like, I would say like people as young as 12 to 15 should watch it in like a normal, you know, sense of it. And I'm like, yeah, I just don't. Like, why not go harder then if you're going to do that and just go for a full adult version, or go lighter to get, you know, the whole Addams Family kids vibe. And so, yeah, I found it weird, but I have strangely enjoyed it. You know, but it does do the same thing. It, you know, it really is just like, do you enjoy Wednesday and this sarcastic comments on everything? And when people are like, you know, we're going to a funeral, and she's like, oh, well, I've been preparing for this my whole life, and just like all this sarcastic, you know, just these sarcastic answers to things constantly. And it's just like, but I tend to chuckle every time. Like it just tends to work, but it's the same thing over and over again.
Yeah. It did look decent. Like, I think, the point you made about like, who is this for? I think it's a super interesting one. Cause like Netflix have done this a few times where, you have something like Stranger Things, which doesn't ever go, you know, doesn't have anything very violent or anything like that, because it can clearly be consumed for a wider audience. And I know this wasn't like the intention, because it just kind of blew up, but something like Squid Game was super fascinating, because that had it was unbelievably popular with a super young audience, with people making mods for it and stuff like Roblox and Minecraft, you know, clearly like super young kids watching Squid Game. And like, that is not even remotely okay for kids to watch, the level of violence in that. And so I think they do toe the line weirdly with something like, that's what I'd always assumed with Wednesday, that I know it blew up on like social media and stuff, and like obviously the character's super popular, but I kind of assumed it was darker based upon what I was hearing beforehand and kind of the websites that were covering it, where I always thought it was, no, it's that character, but it is a more darker take on that character. So yeah, they are weird, where it's like, I guess they can just get away with it, but like they do sneak stuff in sometimes. But then other times they do stuff like 13 Reasons Why, where they bottle it, and they completely ruined that show by editing out some of the craziest parts. And it's like, yeah, because it's there and it's important. I mean, that is crazy, because it's so important for the story, for what you actually see. And it's like, for them to edit that out years later, for what? I don't know. That just made no sense to me. But always good. There's always TV to chat about. I definitely do. I still want to watch American Horror Story for sure, because I've been thinking about that again.
The problem is, it just gets to the point that then, like, yeah, there's Twisted Metal and there's American Horror Story, and you just start to get like a few of the things that you're not mad excited for on your backlog, and then you just, you know, you just got to see when you took away it, and then.
Yeah, this was, I really didn't think I was going to watch this, but then once I put one on, and it being such an easy watch, where I was like, oh, I've already got lost
25 minutes.
Yeah, like that's because when it was 10 episodes all dropped at once, I was like, oh, I was like, that's too much. You know, that is a lot of episodes. But then when you see how unbelievably short they are, I'm like, oh, this is nothing. You know, you can just put one on and it's over in an instant, which I love. And yeah, the fact that I've got Lost still ongoing is like a more serious thing. But then this is just like a fun thing to throw on. It is very good. Because I didn't want another, like say, if I watched From or American Horror Story or something, I really need to take that seriously. Whereas like, I don't need to be fully paying attention all the time during Twisted Metal. Also, I don't know if you know one of the actresses in Twisted Metal, which I don't want to spoil it. No, well, there's someone in it that you are a massive fan of. So,
sign me up. I'm already in.
You definitely watch it for that as well, because she's in the first episode. And I was like, oh yeah, like I do now. When she popped up, I was like, oh, I remember reading that name now, but I'd completely forgotten when I actually watched it. So, yeah, very very exciting. So, yeah, well, I'm sure we'll talk about that in the coming weeks. Like I said, I'm still pretty early because there's a lot of episodes, but they are short. So, yeah, looking forward to seeing the rest of that one. But yeah, that is it for this week. That is episode 360. Thanks for listening, as always, and we'll see you again very soon.
See you later, everyone. Shut up, I can't. Mainly because I never could. And how could I start now?